All right, it is time for a very special Cheap Heat. And before we get into it, I want to give a big shout out to Tommy John. No, I'm not talking about the surgery. I am talking about the revolutionary men's underwear brand that's redefining comfort for guys everywhere, myself included. This is the underwear that I was wearing as I was training for that NBA celebrity game. Every time I played basketball, I was wearing my Tommy John's because it just keeps everything together, okay? No ride-up. Waistband never rolls down. An amazing 21st century design, okay, that makes it impossible to get a wedgie. This is a game changer, okay? You guys know. You listen to the podcast. I'm not the physically strong stat guy, Greg. I'm the physically awkward Peter Rosenberg. I need things to stay together for me, and that's why I loved Tommy John so much. The underwear was amazing. The socks, too, engineered to stay up all day. Plus, if you're looking for underwear or socks, you might as well support Cheap Heat at the same time. So head over to TommyJohn.com/heat. That's TommyJohn.com/heat to experience life-changing comfort, and they'll give you 20% off your first order just for supporting your favorite podcast. Yes, I'm taking the liberty and saying that's us. That's TommyJohn.com/heat for 20% off. TommyJohn.com/heat. Oh, and now it's time for Cheap Heat. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, welcome, welcome. What a, wow, we just are jumping right in. And you know what I got to tell you, as of when I looked earlier, guess what? The number 40th ranked sports and recreation podcast in on planet Earth, Cheap Heat, Peter Rosenberg, SGG, the physically strong, in the building, on a big two-week lead-up to the biggest day in entertainment. I'd go as far as calling it the ultimate thrill ride.
I would agree with that.
Because it seems like at some point over the last few weeks, that became the terminology. And I better learn that before I get down there. WrestleMania 33, around the corner. We started off our lead-up celebration. I didn't know just how big it would be with our Triple H episode, which hopefully you've heard by now. If you have not, it is up on iTunes.
Great interview, by the way. I've heard it.
You listened to it?
I did listen to
what
it.
What a professional you are.
I did.
Thank you. I was really pleased with that. It was really cool. And by the way, Greg, I have another exclusive today.
What? There was supposed to be one more because you got to complete the set.
Yes, coming up later today to end this podcast after you hear me and Greg talk about the week in wrestling, an exclusive sit down with Stephanie McMahon. So I will talk to Hunter and Steph, the most powerful couple in professional wrestling.
I was going
to
say, you played the game, but now I think you bring a Cheap Heat into the McMahon-Helmsley era.
That's exactly right. And then I believe next week we are going to have, I'm going to be sitting down on Tuesday with The New Day. So we'll do an episode then. And then on Friday we will drop our Radio Row Spectacular. Right. So basically what I'm saying is you're going to get four Cheap Heats. Four Cheap Heats leading into WrestleMania over these 2 weeks.
Well, 10 days now to WrestleMania, right?
Yeah, something like that. Maybe less. Yeah, 9, 10. It's Thursday. We're recording this on Thursday, so it's soon. Yeah. So let's not waste any time because we do have to get to Stephanie McMahon. Excuse me. So let's start outside the ring in the world of professional wrestling, and we'll start off with a very, very tragic, unfortunate news. I want to start with it to get it out of the way because it's not only how sad it is, but also to send love and dedicate the show to the now deceased wife of Jim Ross, Jan, who passed away. She was riding a Vespa, and apparently she was hit by a vehicle, was not wearing a helmet, sustained head injuries, and a day later she passes away. And what an awful story it is.
Yeah.
It was – when I saw that he had tweeted about it, that, you know, it said serious condition on the article. The article I saw said serious condition. But then I went and read his Twitter, and it sounded like even worse than serious condition. I think maybe they were using the word serious not in a technical term.
But it
and just
you,
saying
yeah.
It's serious, whereas the term serious in terms of, you know, technically is better than critical. But she was in critical condition, and she was ultimately in a coma. And then yesterday, Jim JR tweeted, Jan was read her last rites tonight. My little angel is gone. And, you know... Have you met her in the past couple of years? Did you get to see her at all?
I didn't get to meet her, but I did get to see her, and like she seemed very warm just from observing.
The first time I met her was maybe three manias ago, two or three manias ago, and over the last few years, I just saw her every year, and she was not this like. I'm not. When people keep saying that she's sweet and warm, it's not like just the way you say it about anyone because it's a nice thing to say. It really.
Oh, she actually was, though. Like, people went up to her, gravitated towards her. She genuinely seemed like she was happy to see everybody.
And she remembered. She didn't just say hi to me like, you know, I don't know JR that well. We have a nice relationship, a nice rapport. But she remembered me the next year. It was like, oh, hey, how are you? How's your wife? She was just a warm, wonderful person. I absolutely instantaneously cried the second I heard this because I was like, wow. Jan was a great person who only in being around her a few times, you could tell was great. So, hate to start off with such sad news, but everyone send just well wishes and happy thoughts, prayers, whatever it is that you do to JR and their family, because that's an incredible loss. Incredible loss for JR. I can only imagine. I can't even imagine. All right, let's flip the script and get into something positive and not very serious, but fun. And that is, I announced this week my collaboration with WWE, Foot Locker, and Puma. And it is going to be I'll give you guys all the information now that I have it. There's like a total of six or seven shirts. Six or seven. You remember?
I think it was six designs on the shirts.
Stone Cold.
Ric Flair.
Undertaker.
Warrior.
That's right. Macho Man.
Yep, Macho Man. How could I forget Macho Man?
And
one more.
There's one more forgetting here.
Oh, it's Andre.
Andre the Giant. So those are six. There are t-shirts for all six in white and black, and there are sneakers for all six in white. The only black is the Undertaker black, of which there will only be 23 pairs of them. They will be in Orlando only. Now, here's the really good news for the cheap heaters. I do not have location yet, but if you are going to be in Orlando for Mania weekend, Saturday morning at 11 a.m., at Foot Locker, I will find out exactly
Foot Locker.
Yeah, it's like I think it might be at the mall. I'll get you the exact address, of course, before it's time. But I will be hosting an event in Orlando where you can get the shoes and meet me. Greg will come as well. Meet Greg.
I won't be hosting, but I'll probably be standing in line for a pair of these shoes.
Yeah, no, you will not be standing in line. And you will also be able to meet the Nature Boy, Ric Flair.
Woo!
So that's all going down.
Wait, the actual Nature Boy or the Nature Boy Ric Flair impersonator from
Southpaw? No. The real, not the impersonator. The real Nature Boy.
That guy was good. I would take the impersonator.
No. You're right. Yeah, honestly.
Flawless. Well, he does Ric Flair impersonator.
Yeah, it's perfect. It's better than my Savage even. So that will be next. Did Juanito, by the way, did the intern bring back my soup?
No.
They didn't have it?
Oh, let me double check.
Thanks, Juan. Sorry, I'm freezing here. I want some delicious warm soup.
I thought you said your suit, like your WrestleMania tux.
Oh, that's a whole other subject I'm dealing with right now. It's a lot of... I have to get two outfits. Anyways, real quick, to final that up. So Saturday, 11 a.m., we'll get you all the details at Rosenberg Radio. I'll get you all the information. But total number of shoes in the world being made is under 600, between a total of all six kinds. So there's under 600 pairs. And go to Foot Locker, find out what store has them. The thing is, they're not going to tell you which store has which ones. So you're going to have to... It's a little bit of a gamble to go find them and see which store has what. So under 600 pairs. The shirts are going to be being more widely distributed.
And the shoes are only going to be in the Orlando area, right?
No. Shoes will be at Foot Locker. Thank you.
Also, we'll just be at the Orlando.
We will be there. So that's the bonus of it. And the Undertakers are in Orlando.
Oh, the Undertakers are in Orlando.
The Undertakers are $500. Let me be clear. $500. But it comes with the monstrous casket box that plays the Undertaker's theme when you open it.
There's some smoke too, right?
I don't know if they were able to pull off the smoke.
Okay.
Got to work with me here, all right? So anyways, that's something cool that's happening. So shout out to everyone who's been reaching out and been so supportive of that.
I don't know about number three.
We got to mention it. Go ahead, Greg.
So yeah, Paige was hacked over the weekend, and It was unfortunate. I'll say this. That's the most I can say about it. Well, not the most I can say, but that's the most.
There's a lot more to say.
Very unfortunate, though. The reaction that she was getting from it online. It was visceral. It was kind of sad, too.
Well, were people really? So people don't know, obviously, it was a, you know, a tape, and there's video, photos, all of the adult persuasion. And so were people really coming at her?
Yeah,
were they just like posting memes and being jerks, kind of?
It was both. It was a lot of victim blaming, you know, because obviously she was hacked and these were stolen. But then, you know, there were people who thought that maybe she did this to get herself fired, like she was trying to get fired, or you know, that since her career has kind of been on the downswing lately, that she did this to get herself some attention. Which
I
is
don't
more
think
like
that's
sexist.
First of all. They're making a biopic about her life. There's a movie about Paige right. coming out, okay? Produced by The Rock.
Just because we haven't seen it does not mean she's doing bad.
Right. So while I admit I've questioned sort of the Del Rio relationship and what's going on there and is it weird and why is she gone? When's she going to come back? And I do hope she will come back and I think she will come back. Yeah, that's crazy. That never even crossed my mind. People are weird to even suggest that. And then, you know, obviously women get treated with a double standard when stuff like this comes out.
Right.
No one was saying anything about Brad Maddox or Xavier Woods, I'm sure, in the same way.
Nope.
But I got to tell you, I've been pretty impressed with how it's been handled. It's been basically just ignored. And I don't think there's anything else you can do. You can't punish people.
No, you can't. Like, because again, that would be more victim blaming.
Now, I mean, there is the thing with the title that's a little weird. But short of that, there's nothing you can really say was wrong about it. It's all making your own sort of moral judgments.
Right. But what's wrong is, like I said, you know, the people sending screenshots and videos to her parents online and things like
horrible.
That. And like,
and
props, even to her.
Props to her parents for standing right by her. And listen, she's a kid, man. They were all very young. People do wild things. Yeah. And or things that other people determine to be wild. So, you know, listen, the crowd in Brooklyn obviously was cheering a lot for Paige.
Even that was kind of I don't know how I felt about that because they chanted "We want Paige" only during the women's match, so it's like you're not.
Well, I want to get to that in a second because the fans irked me in general that night a lot. There were a couple things I really liked, and then some things that really irked me.
Okay.
It was funny, though, that, like, popping for Xavier when he gets on camera, like, extra big. I didn't really have a problem with that. I thought it was sort of funny. And even when they showed Paige on the monitor and everyone cheered.
The cartoon, yeah.
Like, I get it. Like, and honestly, it made me think, she's probably going to be even more over when she comes back. I mean, that did cross my mind.
Maybe, though.
I think
maybe
the
reaction could be in the other way. And then
I don't think so. Think about it. If you're aware of it and you know about it, it means you're, like, of age to know about it. And you're in the world enough that you care enough that you saw it.
But what is of age, right? Because, like,
little kids are probably hidden from us. 8-year-olds don't know what happened.
8-year-olds don't, but, like, if you're old enough to have a Twitter account, you probably know what happened. Or, like, a Facebook or Instagram or any type of social media, you probably know what happened.
But if you're old enough to sort of.
And these kids these days are mad savvy. It was probably a kid who hacked it and put it out there. You never know.
Anyways, I hope it doesn't. I just hope it doesn't have a negative impact on anyone's career. I don't think.
Or life, you know, in general.
Yeah. No. I mean, listen, it's messed up. These hack things are crazy. I don't know why. I got to tell you though, I don't know why people keep sex videos on their phone. I guess it's different because I always like I'm not single, so I don't have any sex videos. Spoiler alert about me and my wife, unfortunately. Alexa might prefer differently. I don't know, but I don't have any, and. You know, but I never understand why, even if you're single, you think it's a good idea to just keep them on your phone. People lose phones.
But even in the cloud, too. Like,
Aren't these stuff
getting hacked from the cloud?
No, no. If at this point in my life I made a video, if I was single and I had a moment that was wild and a girl was like, oh, yeah, you can video.
You know what you got to do to keep it safe?
What?
Put it on a disc or a VHS.
A VHS. Wow. Aggressive.
Yeah, throw it back.
Now, I think what I would do, a pro tip. I would watch it for a couple of weeks. I wouldn't upload it to the cloud. I'd keep it on my phone, not upload it to the cloud.
Right.
Enjoy it for a couple of weeks and delete it. That's it. That you can't – I wouldn't ever – you don't want to keep stuff like that. There's just no upside. Even if you're single now, there's no upside to keeping it. But anyways – Let's move right along because we have a lot to get to. Southpaw Regional. Turns out Southpaw Regional Wrestling, I guess the bad news you would say is that it turns out it was a promotion for KFC.
Yeah.
But ultimately it didn't really matter.
Because it was really good.
Because it was really good. And kudos. I heard it was like talent that kind of came up with the idea. Kudos to whoever let that happen as a creative way to do marketing. Like, it was super funny. How many pieces did they put up?
I saw four.
There were four. I only watched like one.
I saw four episodes. And, yeah, they were all great. Gallows and Anderson were great. And that's the thing, too. I don't know how long they've been working on this. But in retrospect, like hindsight being 2020, then you can understand why they let Gallows and Anderson do a little bit of comedy on Monday Night Raw, because they know backstage that they're working on this thing for KFC.
Well, and they probably just know they're funny.
Yeah.
And that they like doing this stuff. And I've heard Gallows and Anderson, ironically, I heard they're like two of the most – this won't be surprising, but I've heard that they are two of the most old school guys on the roster. Like the way that they have fun – and the way that they treat the wrestling business, they're kind of old school. So them playing the old school guys, it worked. So props to doing something innovative. Like, if you're a company like KFC, that's what you want to do. Mm-hmm. You want to spend money with people who aren't going to be like, we're going to come up with a great way to just hawk KFC. No. It's not about that. It's about just give us great content that right. is our content, that is what we sponsor. And sorry, I was just getting. I get so many news.
Do we have breaking news?
No, I get how many? You know how many I get these days between the Washington Post and New York Times? I have so many, and I'm tempted to look all the time because it's crazy world.
They all say the same thing, though.
Right, but sometimes you see one, you go, "Oh, it's this big," and then you see, I'm like, "Oh, no, I can't tell it's big." And then sometimes they go away too fast, and I can't even tell what happened. Period. All right, and lastly, yesterday we heard that it's a rumor that WWE will purchase ROH. What's say you, Stat Guy?
I remember a couple of months ago, Goldstein tweeted Goldstein.
Whatever you prefer.
All right. I'll go Goldstein. I don't know. But he mentioned to us privately that he heard that WWE was going to buy the tape library, ROH's tape library, and we dismissed it as fake news. But now it's being more widely reported that they're not just going to go for the tape library, but they're going to go for the company itself. And either way, I'm excited about it, to be honest.
Why?
Because if you look at WWE right now, right? What people don't realize, the people who are solely in the WWE ecosystem, what they don't realize is that a lot of their favorites have connections to the Honorable Ring, as Matt Hardy calls it. And it's your former WWE Universal Champion, Kevin Owens. It's Seth Rollins, Daniel Bryan, CM Punk, Samoa Joe, Sami Zayn. And on and on and on. So many people, Cesaro, Cassius Ohno, so many people have spent time in Ring of Honor. And it would just be real cool to go back and see them do work under different constraints where they're in more prominent positions, especially Cesaro and Cassius Ohno as Kings of Wrestling, man. Like, just to go back and see them do damage on like the old pay-per-views or whatever they can get their hands on.
No,
on
there's
the network.
In that sense, I love it. How do you feel about it though, in terms of them having it currently and what that does to the pro wrestling business? Because now you not only have NXT, you have ROH. And ROH was a place that after you were not in WWE,
right.
you could go to. So there is a downside there. Because then the only other thing really left of any significance is TNA. And TNA's significance isn't that high.
Or New Japan, which I would put above TNA.
No, I would too, but it's in Japan. Yes,
yeah.
I would too.
But that's the thing. New Japan is supposed.
I mean, there's AAA in Mexico too. I just mean in terms of here.
Well, yeah, in terms of here, but I mean, in terms of here, WWE was also always the goal for a lot of these guys anyway. So it's like they can. I'm sure some talent like would love it.
But yeah, but if you're now someone who dreams of making it. And WWE owns ROH, and they actually control it. There's a chance they buy the tape library, and they own ROH, and they give it some money, and they let them continue to run it the way they run it, right? That would be one thing. But if WWE, which they tend to do, takes full control,
right.
then if you're someone who WWE isn't interested, you no longer have a place to go to. Because they don't want you. They don't want you in NXT. They don't want you in ROH. They don't want you in anything.
But
it limits the pool of opportunities for up-and-coming talent, potentially.
It does, but it's almost like my thing is the talent who they would get rid of, like they wouldn't get rid of a Dalton Castle or, you know, some of these guys who maybe they haven't been interested in, but who have a huge fan base, because that's just not best for business.
But you're thinking about current. You're not thinking about future. This goes on. This would mean the end of ROH existing.
True.
On its own. So it's about years down the line. Kids are coming up and they're not ready for WWE yet, but they get a chance to be really open up on ROH. Is WWE still going to treat it that way? Or are you now going to have a thing where you throw people like Rhino on ROH? You know what I'm saying? You just don't know what it means for what that brand is.
Right.
Anytime a thing is bought by a much bigger conglomerate, there's no way it doesn't affect it at all.
Right. Which is why I'm worried about the Burger King buying of Popeyes, but that's a whole nother
separate story. Conversation. That's also very, very important. See, here's PBS NewsHour, day four of Gorsuch questioning. That's not breaking news. Every day is a day. I mean, what do you mean? I know there's another day. Anyways, upside, though, would love to have it on the network.
Yeah. Just because there's so much content and so much history, and it just will give you a new appreciation for all of those guys that I mentioned, and even other guys who you might not have known about, you get to discover.
So what do you want to talk? What do you think is the biggest story from within the ring in wrestling professional this week?
I'm going to have to go with this mixed tag team match again. Did John Cena, Miz, Maryse, Nikki Bella mixed tag match that just dominated SmackDown and Talking Smack? But before I do that, though, I do want to congratulate the Sue Usos on their tag team championship victory as well.
The Sue Usos?
Yeah.
The Nusos?
The Nusos. I'm happy that they have the championship. But like you said, what I think the biggest takeaway for me was this Miz, Cena, Maryse, Nikki Bella.
We know you only root for black wrestlers. So, SGG, here's my question. Where do you fall on American Alpha versus the Usos? Because Jason Jordan's black.
Right.
And the Usos are black adjacent.
Right.
So where did you fall on this?
I hate to say it, but I fell with the Usos.
Yeah.
Not that I hate to say it, but, you know, when you set it up like that I have to support the black guy, it makes me sound like a sellout.
But the thing is, you're not fully selling out because, you know, the Usos, they're Samoan,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they definitely have a certain swag to them.
Yes.
And they definitely seem to identify with black culture.
Yep.
I mean, their sweatshirt says day one-ish.
Right.
They're not messing around. So I still think that you hold true to your brand of always rooting for the black wrestler.
Thank you. But and I love the new Usos. I love the Sue Usos. I love this character change. And
it was about time. And it really is. It's shown they're capable of so much with this.
Right. And it's dope, too, because it's like it gives you a whole new appreciation for them as a tag team, especially since like they didn't just change up their look, they changed up their style, in the ring, on the mic, everywhere. And it's just like that's when you know you have like a real special talent. Like if you ever want to second guess them when they were in the face paint and doing the when we say oos you say oh and playing to the kids, now like they erased all doubt about, you know, why they were there and their stature in the company, because they can perform.
So you're telling me, you were very excited, you're telling me, for John Cena versus Fandango?
Well, no. What I was excited for, though, was the whole, like, not what I was excited for. What I enjoyed, though, was the Total Bellas parody that the Miz and Maryse did throughout the show, those little episodes that they aired. And I did enjoy, even though I hated to see him get beat up by Nikki Bella, I did enjoy Maryse Bella. And
why'd you hate seeing him job to Nikki Bella?
Because I feel like Tyler Breeze is so much better than that and super talented. And he's just stuck in a bit of a rut. And I'm sure he's having fun with this tag team that he's in with Fandango, and the team makes sense, but I just wish they were able to do more. But
in general, though, I just went the second I saw Cena versus Fandango tonight, I was like, oh, well, we're not getting very much out of their side of this story tonight. It was more about the Miz
Right.
It was more about that skit, the fake Total Bellas show.
Which was fine.
And who I did not see Talking Smack. Who was on Talking Smack?
Well, the Usos were on Talking Smack, brand new tag team champions. Very entertaining segment. And then Talking Smack closed out with John Cena and Nikki Bella speaking directly to Miz and Maryse. And like Cena said on Talking Smack, you know, Nikki was more polite and more political. And, you know, she took the high road in saying that she's not going to tear down another woman, and woman to woman, she thinks that they both should be better than that. But then John Cena went right at Miz and Maryse, and he pulled no punches. And it just reminded me of what you said on this show. I can't remember if it was last week or 2 weeks ago, that, you know, there is something that, like whatever this story is built around is based on, like, real heat, real drama. And
I think very specifically the Total Divas part is the very real part. That's the part that this is about. That they were definitely friends at some point. Total Divas was definitely, I had heard way back that Kelly Kelly was going to be on Total Divas. So when Maryse said that whole thing about how me and Kelly Kelly were going to do it, I remember hearing that Kelly Kelly was going to do it. So there is some sort of, there's something to that story.
And I'm like, part of me feels like, you know, Cena's the ultimate professional and he might have been working on the Talking Smack interview. But at the same time, like, you know, just from watching wrestling over the years, I know that this is how Vince McMahon likes to play, from Savage Hogan to Hart Michaels to Matt Hardy and Edge. Like, Vince McMahon likes to take these things where people have these little issues and say, you know what, let's make a story out of it. Let's make some money off of it, blow off some steam, and see where it goes. And so, you know, I'm hooked. That's all I can say. I'm hooked.
All right. And I will say, I think the most important thing that happened this week, yeah, the Roman Reigns, Braun Strowman thing. I'm really curious, and I asked Triple H about this, and he really didn't have an answer for me. I'm so curious about what's going to happen with Braun Strowman.
Right.
Like, what the hell's going on with Braun Strowman? He's so prominent right now that, like, him just being in the Battle Royal just doesn't seem right.
Same. I mean,
like, you'd almost expect that he would come out. I'd almost rather him come out and be involved in Taker Roman.
In what way, though?
I don't know.
Because he's already cost Roman Reigns the win in a huge match. And he's already lost to Roman Reigns one-on-one. So what does he do? Does he cost Taker now? What, like, I don't know. Like you said,
if he cost Taker and helped Roman, Roman would hate that. So it could still further that story and just make the crowd hate Roman even more.
Right. Well, that was going to happen no matter what.
If he accepted the help from Strowman, though, and took it and pinned Taker.
Or does he just thrash both of them and then throw Roman over Taker?
We don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
What do you think when it comes to a sport coat here? And they have a listing of, you can get it as athletic. Hold the joke. I know that I shouldn't get anything athletic. What do you think that means, size-wise?
I have no idea. Is it? I don't know.
Let's look at the fit guide. I'm so confused about. I need so many clothes for this trip.
Are you packing a salmon jacket?
You think I should do that?
I feel like Cena was wearing one last night on Jimmy Fallon.
I didn't see him on Fallon. Did you watch him?
I did.
How was he?
It was entertaining, but he always is, though. Like,
what did he talk about besides WrestleMania? And
that's exactly what he talked about. He talked about WrestleMania. They played a game, and then that was it. But he was wearing a salmon jacket, though.
It was salmon?
I was like, is Cena retiring tonight?
That would have been a moment. And what if he? And then if he had FU'd Jimmy Fallon and said, "I got a lot more in the tank." Was he mostly WrestleMania talk or what?
Yeah, it was just mostly like small talk, WrestleMania talk. There was a Southpaw Regional Wrestling shirt given away, you know.
They gave away one shirt?
He gave it to Jimmy Fallon, so.
Oh, he gave Jimmy Fallon a shirt.
Right.
That shirt's never seen the light of day. A wasted Southpaw regional wrestling shirt.
I would have took it.
Well, we know you would have. You're one of the biggest Southpaw regional wrestling fans in the business today.
I remember Lethal Leapier when they were talking. I remember.
You remember Lethal Leapier?
Yes.
That is the best thing about what they did. Like the little things that I only watch, like I said, I only watched one, I think. But the little things like Lethal Leapier are referring to Bad News Allen coming to town.
Yep.
The original like territory name for Bad News Brown. Like that, I pop big for like the little, just the little things they do to really pay homage to territory wrestling was awesome. I really, really enjoyed that. All right. I think Shane McMahon and AJ might have been the biggest actual takeaway from the week, though. Just that we saw more. I mean, we had the follow-up now 2 weeks ago. We didn't talk about this much last week. We didn't talk a lot about the beatdown of Shane McMahon.
Which was beautiful.
What, just how thorough it was?
Yeah, I loved seeing that side of AJ Styles.
And the black eye. Now, because you not only root for the black guy, you also root for the black eye.
Yeah.
That's a fact.
It's always.
Because whenever Greg hears someone goes, black eye, he thinks they said black guy.
And then I'm all in.
And he's like, I'm all in. He's going over, whoever it is.
And then it's too late to back out once I get the clarification.
I loved the setup there. Listen, I did say I think we're going to end up caring about this match. And I think we're at the point now where it's – here's the question, though. What did you think of Shane hitting the flying elbow again the week before the go-home? I feel like we saw that exact same thing last year.
Yep.
Wasn't it? Like, wasn't it basically the same thing?
And that was my thought, too, is like – okay, again. All right. Like,
and did he actually hit the elbow? I don't know. We don't know.
Yeah, and what's with this Smack? Like, does the SmackDown have the same budget as Raw or just about? Like, why do they only have one camera angle for
That means they didn't want us to see the other angle. They showed a second angle. They showed one other angle. They showed two angles of the same spot.
Okay, I only saw the one. But
they kept showing the same one, and then they showed one different one, but it's still, you couldn't see if his elbow actually made it to AJ. And even though that is far for a mortal man, I don't know. I expect Shane's able to hit that from there.
Right, and especially, and I mean, I don't know if this is
just
me, but especially because he makes a point to wear some J's every time he steps out there. So he should have a little bit more on the hops, I think.
Do you think that he was – you think he's worried about overshooting it because that's a disaster?
Then don't do the elbow. Do a splash or do like a leg drop or something.
I don't think he has the leg drop in the arsenal from up there. I've never seen him do the leg drop from up there, I don't think.
But see, that would have been different. And he can – like if he can go coast to coast, he could have done the leg drop.
Maybe it's just scary. That's been a few years.
That's true. But also,
has he done coast to coast since he came back yet?
He did it to Taker.
He did do it to Taker. That's right.
He did it to Taker. But at the same time, too, now that you mention, and I feel like he attempted it in Survivor Series and got blasted out of the air by Roman Reigns. But now that you mention it, though, a leg drop does take a lot more out of you than an elbow drop, though.
There's a lot more risk there.
I've heard people say that like it just compresses your spine, and then coming off the like just a regular leg drop. So coming off the top rope is not a move.
You know what's funny? I'll tell you this right now. When I go back and watch Hogan's leg drop, it's amazing because like I've said this a million times. When you start like getting into like a smart wrestling fan, and you start like being like Hogan wasn't that good, and then you sort of like watch him again. His leg drop looks so good. Like, generally speaking, when you look, picture how it looks, mm-hmm. Whether you think the leg drop's a good move or not, it looked like he really, like, it's actually.
He got height on it.
Yo, he got height. It's actually kind of shockingly athletic. Like, when you watch a good one, like, in his height, in his prime, yo, it was kind of a thing of beauty, to be honest with you. He went straight up in the air and fell down literally right across, like, sort of their neck chest region. It really looked good. And, yeah, it's one of the reasons his body's totally broken down.
Yep.
And it's funny because we all thought, like, the leg drop was a nothing move. And it's not.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, it hurts the person doing it way more than the person taking it, but.
Well, it's funny because, like, we would have thought, like, the, like, a pile driver was much more impactful. But if you execute a pile driver well, there's no danger at all. Yeah. Pile driver is only dangerous if you have the person too low, in which case it's incredibly dangerous. But particularly for the person delivering the pile driver, well, a tombstone, I imagine, is obviously super easy if you're strong enough to do it. Now, a classic old school pile driver, that actually doesn't get enough credit for the athleticism it required, too.
to pick somebody up and then jump with them and then hold.
And put your legs out. Like, here's the bottom line I can't fathom because I'm not a pro wrestler. Both the leg drop, the flying leg drop, a pile driver, it is so unnatural to jump and fall on your butt on a hard surface.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you were to right now be like, stand on your bed and feel comfortable jumping and sticking your legs straight out and falling down, I don't know that I would do it naturally. I don't think my body would let me do it.
Well, haven't you had people on this, like wrestlers on this podcast, say that that's most of what the beginning of like wrestling school is? It's just like teaching your body not to do certain things
yeah.
so that you can stay safe. Like even going over the top rope and like, you know, you're teaching your body to just go and not hold on so that you don't slam into the apron.
Yeah, I mean, or just taking a basic back bump and tucking your chin, right, and how difficult that is. And remember, anytime anyone bumps, and this is why it looks terrible when people play wrestle. You'd play wrestle and be like, why does this – you watch the video back? You ever video play wrestling?
No, I have a video.
You never did it? We did in college. In college, we got into this – like, it's funny because I wasn't even watching wrestling, but we – other people were. So we started having these, like, our own Royal Rumbles. And I would still be into that because I loved childhood wrestling. So we would videotape the Royal Rumble. At some point, I'm going to get some of this footage. And we would – you'd watch the tape back and most of it just looked horrible. And it's because no one can bump. Because a bump, you're jumping in the air onto your back. So, for example – when you see like a Donald Trump or whoever it is, like take a clothesline or something and they crumple to the ground,
yeah.
It looks horrible. A clothesline only looks good if you know how to bump.
Yep.
That's why when you see a clothesline or imagine what it looks like a missile drop kick. You have to fly when you get hit. If you just crumple to the ground, you look like trash. So we take for granted how difficult something as simple as the leg drop is. And I beg you. You go back, because we just talked about it last week on Bring It to the Table. Cheap plug, next Thursday, new Bring It to the Table, 8 o'clock, WWE Network. We went back and watched, and every time I watch the end of Hogan Andre, I'm struck by a couple things. Number one, how insane the crowd's going. When you compare it to, like, the crowd and anything else, like, do you appreciate how happy, like, the level of, like, screaming in the background?
Oh, yeah. Like,
and it looks insane.
I think what changed that is like cell phones. So now people are like trying to get a picture instead of just being in the moment.
Man, it's so true. I wish we could put that down a little bit. Like, it looks so fun. And it was even like that all the way up until 18 with Rock and Hogan again, where the crowd just looked electric the entire time.
As soon as that first person brought in that Nokia or whatever it was and started snapping pictures, like, it just ruined it for everybody.
Remember last year when there was that story about that picture that came out of someone holding a cell phone in, like, 1980 or something? Do you remember that?
No, I don't.
It was like, hold on, old photo, man with cell phone. There it is. It became this thing, and someone was like, did someone have a cell phone? Oh, no, it was a boxing match. It was at, it was like a boxing match from like the late 90s. And you're like, what is that? And eventually people, I think, figured it out, that it was like, I don't know, or they assumed it was some sort of camera maybe from Japan that we didn't know about.
Which makes sense because they always have the wild technology.
That looks better.
Like,
here it is.
5 years
ahead. It was from a Tyson fight. And yeah, it's this picture right here. It does look like someone.
Oh, wow.
It does look like someone's holding a cell phone, though. And when the story first broke, this first became a thing.
That looks like the camera and all of that, like on the back of the phone.
I know. And if you've never seen it, you could literally just go. I just googled like old man cell phone boxing match, and it came up. Or you could do old man cell phone, or old photo Tyson, whatever. It definitely looks like someone's holding a cell phone. And it got my imagination going so bad, like how tight that would be. And if someone like was actually from the future and they went back and they were able to go to that Tyson fight, and it might have been like the Bite Fight or something. It was something pretty historic, or Tyson Holyfield, the first one. But whatever it was, imagine if you went back and you like knew you had to play it low, but you just couldn't resist pulling out your phone and taking a picture.
Right.
You're like, I'd at least show my wife. This is insane. Anyways, I don't know how we got on the tangent of Hogan and the leg drop. Samoa Joe and Sami Zayn got to almost have the match that people were sort of looking for in the pay-per-view, I think. They started off Raw with a nice match. What do we think about Mick Foley? Like, there's rumors now that Foley is getting surgery. and is going to be gone. Like, that was actually the end of Foley. What are your thoughts?
Do you think we I hope
he has to show up at Mania.
Yeah,
at least.
I hope not. I hope that wasn't the end of Foley. That was very unceremonious. It's just like, get out. But then again,
but not even like action packed get out.
Yeah, but then again, so many people have been written off that exact same way that I don't know why.
I get so sick of the way wrestling blogs write about news, though. They use the term, they're talking about how they think how Foley's finished. And it's like, yeah, but in fact, what people are saying, blah, 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 that it's not whatever, and Foley's gone for good. I'm like, why would you write the word for good? Because even if he's gone, and he's gone for a year, you think Mick Foley's gone for good?
Right.
You think he's never appearing on TV
again?
He'll
be back eventually, but I mean...
Yeah, like, we don't know. The question is, does it mean a month, or does it mean a year?
Right.
And does it mean does he still show up at WrestleMania? But the idea of saying Mick Foley, someone who's literally never been gone for what, since his career ended with them, has he ever been gone much more than a year?
Well, he did some time in TNA. I can't remember exactly how much time that was, but that had to have been the longest stretch.
But it was never that long, though. He's literally, so like, I just hated the term, whether or not he's gone for good. For good means for good. You can't just throw around for good. I'm taking words back, Stack Guy Greg. Hashtag take the words right back.
Words have meaning. You can't just say things like that. It's so final.
Yeah, I appreciate the English language, all right? But, yeah, I hope that wasn't the end either. I loved Jericho showing the picture of what's-his-face wearing a Jericho shirt.
That was the highlight of Raw, Jericho, the Jericho highlight reel.
Why do you think it was the highlight? No pun intended. Why do you think the highlight reel was the highlight?
Because it was just so entertaining and like...
The KO shot, him in this... Oh, I loved it.
Yeah, and with the poster in the background and even like the DMs and Jericho flipping it to like, yeah, I was never his friend. I was his idol. Like, he looked up to me no matter
Perfect.
What he can say. Like, yeah, all of it was just masterfully done.
How many matches do we have on this card at this point? Because they made it official. Shout out to DJ Drewski. They made it official yesterday. What match did I see they added on SmackDown? Baron Corbin, Dean Ambrose.
Oh, for the Intercontinental title.
AKA the popcorn match. I hate to say it, but doesn't it feel like that right now?
Yeah, I don't. I want to see Dean Ambrose wrestle at WrestleMania just because he's the Intercontinental champion, but I don't know that I want to see Baron Corbin wrestle at WrestleMania. I'd be fine with him winning the Battle Royal again, or even going back in and losing it. I don't know, it doesn't matter.
But it's not because he's not good. I'm just not fully invested yet. I think Corbin's talented.
So you wouldn't go so far as to say that he's not good, though?
No. I don't think I know that Baron Corbin's not good yet. Not yet, no. But I will tell you, I don't get excited for his segments. I haven't yet.
So, okay, you're not going to say that he's not good, okay, which is fair. I can respect that. Will you say that you'd rather see somebody else in his position, or like that he's not ready for the position?
Great.
Does he belong on SmackDown?
Great question. Does he belong on SmackDown? Let me get to what I know you're getting to, Stack Eye Greg. Or it's not maybe directly what you're getting to, but it's in there, and I with a minute. Would I rather see the appropriate time and energy given to maybe someone else, maybe Apollo Crews, or someone else, maybe not Apollo Crews, just someone else who's talented? I am more interested in Apollo Crews. Like, if Apollo Crews could turn and have it, because he doesn't work. Babyface Apollo Crews is not, it's so generic and boring. It's just not working.
He smiles a lot, though.
Okay, we got to stop that. No one wants Big Smiley that often. It's so rare we want Big. The only way Big Smiley works with, like, Big E, because they have, like, a gimmick going, and it's funny. Otherwise, to just be smiley all the time and that big, I don't know. It's not for me. But anyways, Corbin has gotten a lot of time. I'll say that. He's gotten a lot of time. Has he delivered on the time he's gotten? No. I don't think Corbin has delivered on the time he's gotten yet. And it doesn't seem to me that, like, he's not ready physically. It's just, like, it just hasn't been great. I just never have been drawn in.
Right.
That's it. I haven't been drawn in. So, anyways, do you have the card?
Yes, 12 matches so far.
Come on. Official? No, this can't be official. Let's go through. We'll see which were official.
The Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal.
Yep.
Is official.
Probably pre-show, though, right?
Well, I don't know.
Some of these are going to end up pre-show. A kickoff show.
The Battle Royal has never been on the pre-show, though.
It's always been on the show? You sure?
At WrestleMania 30, it was on the show. Last year, it was on the show for sure, because I feel like I just barely missed the pre-show.
All right, so here we go. Total, and we'll try to break down where we think things end up.
Luke Gallows and Carl Anderson versus Enzo and Cass versus Cesaro and Sheamus. That's official.
Yep, let's make it official.
Neville and Austin Aries is official.
Let's make it official.
Alexa Bliss
versus all available women. Yep. Official.
Bayley versus Charlotte versus Sasha versus Nia.
Official. Main card.
Dean Ambrose versus Baron Corbin, just announced.
Mm-hmm.
Shane McMahon versus AJ Styles.
Mm-hmm.
John Cena and Nikki Bella versus The Miz and Maryse.
That's right.
Chris Jericho versus Kevin Owens.
That's right. 9.
Undertaker versus Roman Reigns.
Jeez, we're at 10.
Goldberg versus Brock Lesnar.
11. Bray Wyatt versus Randy Orton. 12.
Triple H versus Seth Rollins if he signs the contract. 13.
Wow. Have we ever been in a situation in which we have 13 matches to talk about with still a week out?
If you... Well, in us, no. Never. Like,
I mean, WrestleMania 3 was maybe like 10.
Yeah, and even the tournament, I feel like, had 14 matches. But it was a tournament, though. So, like, it was already going to have a lot of matches.
So, WrestleMania 3, by the way, results. 12. Can-Am Connection, Bob Orton in Morocco. Billy Jack versus Hercules. Hillbilly, Haiti Kid, Little Beaver, Bundy, Tokyo, Littlebrook, Harley Race, NJYD, Dream Team and Rougeau Brothers, Piper and Adonis, Hart Foundation and the Bulldogs, Butch, that was a six-man with Tito and Danny Davis.
Dangerous Danny Davis.
That's right. The Natural, Butch Reed and Coco, Steamboat and Savage, Honky Tonk and Jake, Sheik and Volkov. They really use tag teams then a lot to fill stuff in there against the Killer Bees, and then Hogan and Andre. They also had so many short matches. It's another thing that's really interesting. Look at this. Time of matches, right, from WrestleMania 3? Can-Am Connection, the first opening match was 5.5 minutes. I remember that match really well. Billy Jack and Hercules, which ended in the double countout, that went 7.5 minutes.
What?
Right?
That didn't feel like it, but...
That was the third longest match on the card. Okay.
Billy Jack and Hercules?
And Hercules, yep. Hillbilly Jim against King Kong Buddy. That match was 3 minutes and 25 seconds officially. 3 minutes and 25 seconds.
That's crazy.
Harley Race and JYD, 4 minutes, 22 seconds.
Top 10 greatest of all time wrestler, Harley Race, the king.
By the way, I would have respected more you putting JYD in there. I love JYD.
What did you say at Raw that was hilarious that you should have said when I did the list?
I don't remember. What was
you
the
said
joke?
It says you said it showed that I'm how obsessed that I am about Race.
Oh, I said yes. SGG, SGG put Harley Race on the list instead of Hulk Hogan, which shows how obsessed he is with Race. Yo, the double play on that is incredible. Oh. I got to tell you, that is deep. So and then 4 minutes only for JYD and Harley Race, the hair versus hair. Which I remember having like this build and everything in the match, and it leads to the him putting him to sleep. 6.5 minutes. Now, the Hart Foundation and Danny Davis, they did 8.5 minutes. 3.5 minutes for Butch Reed and Coco. That's
so
nothing.
Did they really just make the most of their time? Because
because it didn't feel like those matches were terrible.
If a match gets 8.5 minutes now, we'd riot. Like a match that was built up that much in like 5 minutes, there'd be chairs and trash getting thrown in the ring.
But remember, here's the thing. There's a few matches on here with very little story. Harley Race and JYD had story. The six-man tag was just made-up BS story. Billy Jack and Hercules had a story.
Which six-man tag? The
Hillbilly one.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
That was just like, I got my little guys here, and you're going to get your little guys, and King Kong Bundy, don't you mess with my little guys.
Right.
And that was basically the whole story. Butch Reed and Coco had no story that I remember. It was like that. Do you remember any story of that?
No, I remember the tag team match though. The not the tag team match. It was a six man. Also, the Hart Foundation and
Coco?
Yeah, not the Hart Foundation of Coco, the Hart Foundation of Bulldogs.
Oh, yeah. You mean the Hart Foundation of Danny Davis. That had story. That was when the Danny Davis story was really big, too. And then the Sheik and Volkoff Killer Bees, not really much story there. Maybe they just didn't like each other generally. Honky Tonk and Jake Roberts, they did a little bit with. Anyways, and in case you were wondering on the big two matches, Hogan Andre, 12 minutes, 1 second. That felt like it was a war that went on. It was 12 minutes. And Steamboat and Savage, how long do you think that was, Greg?
Wasn't that like 22 minutes?
14:35. They got it done in less than 15 minutes. Two of the best who ever did it. Anyway, so it'll be interesting. So let's take a look now at this perspective card that we're looking at and see whether or not these are not all ending up on the main card. In 2017, I cannot imagine it. Okay, Bray and Randy, main card.
Have to
Goldberg
be.
Brock, main card. Taker Roman, main card. Shane AJ, main card. Jericho Owens, main card. John Cena, main card. Bayley and Charlotte, Sasha and Nia, main card. Okay?
Yep.
Now, that's seven matches, in my opinion, that are guaranteed main card. Here are the ones that I could see floating. You might think these are a reach, but that I could see. Dean Ambrose, Baron Corbin, I wouldn't be shocked to see it on Kickoff Show.
Okay.
I don't think it will, but I'm just saying I wouldn't be shocked if it did. The women's match on SmackDown, could definitely see that being Kickoff Show.
Yeah, which I don't think
I hope it's
should,
not.
But
I hope it's not. Could see it. I would much prefer that over Corbin Ambrose right. on the main card. Neville Austin Aries. I think they have a chance. They could do something amazing on the main card, and I hope it is.
Yeah, I was going to say, they are not.
That should be main card, but it is. Keep in mind, it is the Cruiserweight Championship. It's sort of the perfect thing for Kickoff Show. No. They have their own show.
But here's why.
Although they've been giving it raw time.
Yeah, and here's why they have to throw that on the main card. I think not only are they going to put this on the main card.
You think it's a headline? You think it's going to be after Brock and Goldberg?
I don't think it's not going after Brock and Goldberg. But I don't see. This is tricky, right? I don't think they should close the show with Brock and Goldberg.
A lot of people seem to have that feeling. But honestly, what do you close the show with?
They're definitely going to close the show. I just don't think you should close the show with Brock and Goldberg. I think where Neville.
Honestly, the likely best match on the card
is Neville Austin Aries.
And second, I wasn't thinking that because I know they would have no chance to close the card. Jericho Owens could be really good.
Yeah.
They could have a really good match.
And which, if they were competing for a championship, then I could see them closing the show too. But
it's for the U.S. Championship.
Oh, I meant like the Universal Championship right. or the World Championship. But what I was going to say about Neville and Austin Aries, though, is not only do I think you put them on the main card, I think you need them to go right before the Roman Reigns Undertaker match, depending on how you want to book that match.
Well, no, or right before Goldberg.
Right. But right before one of those matches where you think the crowd is not going to react the way you want them to react. So you throw Neville and Austin Aries in there to drain the crowd of their energy, hate included, and then, like, by the time the crowd gets back into it, they are enjoying the match again. You know what I mean? Instead of having the match start with a crowd who's hot, but it's a lot of hate.
Very interesting point. I like that. I think there's a chance, much to your chagrin, that you might hear ding, ding, ding to start the show. Ding, ding, ding. The following contest is for the WWE Cruiserweight Championship. There's a chance they start the show with it.
Because
they love coming out hot. They love coming out hot. They used to like to start with Money in the Bank. Like, they like to start. It's a long night. Special start time, in case you didn't
7 p.m.
know. That's right. Special start time. And special kickoff show start time.
5 p.m.
So
Eastern. We're talking about Eastern.
That's Eastern Standard Time.
Yes.
And my tux is already in the mail. So everyone should be ready for that. So it'll be interesting to see where they go. The tag match on Raw, that could be a kickoff show.
Yeah. Unfortunately.
Battle Royal, I think you keep on the main show. I think you put tag match on kickoff show. And I think you put Dean and Corbin on kickoff show. And then I think you stick with a 10 match card. What are your thoughts?
That sounds fair to me. That sounds about right. A couple matches on the kickoff show because you want to give people a reason to tune in to the kickoff show. You know,
sorry?
Even more so.
Excuse me?
Even more so. No disrespect to you, Peter Rosenberg. You've been doing a wonderful.
And my friend Sam Roberts.
You guys have both been doing a great job on the pre-show. I've been tuning in, but I feel like the WWE Universe still does not give the kickoff show the respect that it deserves.
Well, I'll tell you one thing right now. If you're having a WrestleMania party, and you're a listener of Cheap Heat, and matter of fact, you should tweet us, at Rosenberg Radio, at Stack Guy Greg. If you're having a pre-show, a WrestleMania party, and you're a Cheap Heat listener, and it doesn't include the kickoff show, consider yourself no longer a peckerhead. Because any true peckerhead or humanoid is going to be having the WrestleMania party start at 5 o'clock Eastern time, so they can get sweet, sweet Monday Night Rosenberg on a Sunday.
They're going to have it starting at 4:30 so they can get their brews, pass out their hors d'oeuvres.
No, 4:30.
Yeah, yeah.
Expect to do 4:30 to 11 o'clock. Oh, it's time for our interview? All right, well, perfect timing. We got to wrap. Last, what do you have to say here, Greg, before we get to, and yes, we will be getting to Stephanie McMahon in just a minute.
Well, I just want to tell them stay mage. I'm not going to keep
that's it?
Waiting anymore.
Oh, yeah, we got enough episodes. We got enough episodes. Yes. And we just gave you an hour. And now we got Stephanie McMahon. Stay mage and hang out. Yes, as promised, we are now like 10 days away from WrestleMania in Orlando. We talked to Triple H Tuesday and another first for Cheap Heat. Stephanie McMahon joins me today. Steph, how are you?
I'm great. How are you? 1 week from Sunday. Can you believe it?
I'm obviously this year I am particularly excited. It's been a tradition in my life, but to get to be a part of the kickoff show this year, and we're doing an episode of Bring It to the Table from Orlando, so I'm very excited to be there. I want to get there and talk about a bunch of things and what we're most excited about on the card, et cetera, but I've never really had the opportunity to talk to you for more than like 30 seconds. So I have a couple of things I just have always
been curious
about.
Don't you know that's
how
long we have for this interview?
I know. I'll pretend like it's that. But the first thing I want to know is when for you, Steph, you're such a prominent part of the WWE on camera and, of course, most importantly, behind the scenes. But was it always something that you knew you wanted to be a part of, or was there a time at first when it was just sort of the family business?
Well, I guess it's never just sort of the family business when it's WWE. And yes, I have always wanted to be a part of it all my life. Not only have I been a fan growing up, but it was also a way for me to be with my family. You know, my parents were busy building this business when I was growing up. And, you know, I really had a pretty amazing childhood. And all I ever wanted to do was be with them and be a part of it. And so I really didn't consider anything else.
Who do you remember, like, and I actually interviewed your brother earlier this year, and this is kind of some of the stuff that I was fascinated by and curious with Shane too, but do you remember who were some like the early personalities and people, whether on camera or off, that sort of you remember having you know, some sort of bond with and learning from in the early days?
Well, I think you learn from everything and everyone all the time. I think, you know, especially when you're younger, you learn without realizing you're learning. So even just watching our show in terms of watching matches, you are, well, at least I found myself studying them and studying the reactions. And I always had a strong affinity for the heels, as you can imagine. And yeah. The integral role that they play in helping to create the babyface and just how important that role is and the psychology of it and how everybody would respond. But in terms of, you know, people around me, and I know my brother would say this name as well, is Pat Patterson. Mm-hmm. He, you know, was the first ever Intercontinental Champion, but he then also, he was really my dad's booking partner, which, you know, in wrestling, you book, right? You book your attractions and then you build the storylines around those attractions. Very rarely does it happen where it's the storyline first, though, of course, it does work that way sometimes. And Pat was definitely very influential in my life. I mean, of course, my father and my mother. My brother just stretched me every chance he got. So I guess I learned how to deal with, you know, that. It was certainly a learning experience. You know, again, just there were so many incredible influences around me. And it's also so interesting from my perspective because I knew all of these great big tough guys as a little girl, and they always treated me differently. And like I remember Harley Race, one of the toughest competitors ever, one of the toughest people ever.
Yeah, legit.
And period.
Tough guy.
Yeah, like not even in WWE, just period. And when my first daughter was born, he went, and I was told by his wife, BJ, who unfortunately has passed, that he went and personally hand-picked a pair of earrings for my baby girl. You look at, you know, the grand wizard, Ernie Roth, who was quite the character in his heyday, and I grew up knowing him as Uncle Ernie. You know, and I learned what ribs were, and I learned how to take them, you know, and how to, you know, just, I learned how these incredible people were a part of this business. Not only were they larger than life on-screen personalities, but they were these incredible people, you know, behind the scenes in their everyday lives. And they were fascinating and all different walks of life. You know, I guess you're just sort of, growing up, I was exposed to so much and so many different types of people. It sort of gives you a different perspective.
Do you remember ever being, quote, smartened up, or was it just sort of?
I smartened myself up. Remember when I learned Carney, though. It was actually Pat's husband at the time, though they weren't officially married, but his partner, I guess, Louie Dondero, who taught me Carney one day by the pool while Pat was booking with my dad. And oh my God, were my dad and my brother upset that I learned Carney at about 8 years old. Because then they could no longer, you know, say things that they didn't want me to understand around me. And it was pretty awesome. I loved it. My oldest daughter is always trying to learn Carney. And she thinks she knows how to speak it, but she doesn't. And hopefully we won't be smartening her up anytime soon.
That's what I was going to say, though. I mean, it's interesting to me because obviously this business from your childhood to now is so different. And one of the things I talked about with Triple H, which I thought he put it in a really fascinating term, was, you know, when I sort of asked him, do you miss the good old days, you know, coming from where he came from? Because he really is sort of as a performer from the last days of the business being sort of what it used to be like. And, you know, he sort of pointed out that no, he doesn't, because a lot of what the good old days were, a lot of the things that people talk about was kind of things that happened outside the ring. Whereas now the fun is still had. It's just more about the business and not the wild times. And in fact, a lot of the things that used to be sort of embarrassing or things that he did not like about the wrestling business are gone now. Mm-hmm. And he's happy about that. And I wonder what it's like for you as well. The transition of, you know, when you were a kid at the garden at a house show, hanging out with your dad versus, you know, I saw you backstage just briefly the other day, and, you know, people are taking tours before Raw.
Right.
It is such a, are you ever just blown away by how different the world has become?
Well, I'm blown away, I think, every day in WWE because it grows at such a rapid rate. And, you know, the thing is, our fans suspend their disbelief. You know, it's no different than a movie or a television show. It's not like, you know, in the 80s when my dad coined the phrase sports entertainment and everyone freaked out because, oh, my God, you're unveiling the curtain. You're going to kill the business. No, he's going to make the business bigger than it's ever been before. But he had to prove that out, and I certainly understand, you know, people being scared of that, you know. But when you look at what the business has become, right? I mean, and it takes all of those things. It takes partners taking tours. It takes, you know, it takes proliferating platforms. It takes digital and social media and launching your own subscription service and also having your traditional linear television coverage. It takes all of these different business models, this incredible executive team that we have, as mm-hmm. well as these incredible talent. And I think the talent themselves have evolved. Not only are they incredible athletes, but they are also businessmen and women. And they recognize that they are their own individual brands. And they take every advantage to build. Well, the smart, successful ones do. They take every advantage that they can to build their brand and their connection to the audience because they recognize that if they do that, then it only enhances their popularity and what they mean, you know, to WWE and the WWE universe.
Well, one thing that's made the WWE so special is the charitable work. And, you know, I honestly, it's something that over just before I was doing any work with you guys, but just observing it by covering it and going to WrestleMania and seeing how near and dear this was, especially to you. It goes well beyond covering your bases to do good PR work. It's something that is really, I mean, you can just throw John Cena out there as an example and the incredible work you guys do with Make-A-Wish, but it goes well beyond that. When and why did that become such an important piece for you specifically?
Well, to answer that, I have to go back a little bit because it's been infused in me since I was a little kid. And giving back has always been a part of WWE. We just didn't publicize it as much. So, you know, we've had a partnership with Make-A-Wish for over 30 years, almost since their inception. Right. We've been partners with Special Olympics for decades. When we went to the Attitude Era, we, you know, decided to part ways for a little while. And then, you know, we were able to come back together in a much bigger way. But we've had these incredible partnerships for a very long time. It has always been a part of what our brand is at our core, you know, as a part of our DNA. But Vince at that time, and I do call him Vince in business and Dad at home, he didn't want to talk about what we did because he didn't want people to think we were doing it for the wrong reasons. And it was actually a few years ago, our chief marketing and now chief revenue officer, Michelle Wilson, actually said to him, you know, we could, with this incredible reach that we have, we could do so much more for our partners if we did talk about it. And I think he started looking at it differently. And so now we do utilize our platforms to spread these incredibly important messages. And for me, having it be ingrained since I was a little kid, but then also just for me personally, and I really think this is true for anybody who has the opportunity to give back, you know, it's our mission to put smiles on people's faces, whether we do that through our content or by giving back. And when you have the opportunity to make somebody smile, especially a little child who really needs it. I mean, I can give you so many examples. When we do our literacy initiative and the WrestleMania Reading Challenge, and we go to some of these schools that are called, you know, free lunch schools, and you see kids that they could be homeless. You know, I remember this one school in particular in L.A., and they had just changed their uniforms to a dark uniform because, you know, oftentimes kids weren't able to wash their clothes on a regular basis, and they were embarrassed by that. And the dark uniform helped hide some of that. Mm-hmm. And school was really the only family that they had. And when you can, you know, get a hug from one of those kids and look in their eyes and see them smile, I mean, there's nothing more rewarding than that. It just, it fills your soul, you know? And the same thing when you're at these Be A Star rallies, and Be A Star standing for Show Tolerance and Respect, our anti-bullying initiative, and you are able to touch these kids, and you can see the impact that you make on their face. And honest to God, if we made a difference in just one child's life, if you made one person's life better, I mean, isn't that what life is all about? Isn't it about giving back and paying it forward? And everybody has a different positioning on it, but you know, when you just walk down the street and you smile at somebody and they smile back at you, how great does that feel?
Well, I think it's funny. I think people may hear that and initially, if they're skeptical because of the big business that it goes with WWE, it's more self-serving than people realize.
You know, yeah.
It actually makes you feel amazing.
Amazing. Like
we had a young man come in yesterday to the Michael Kay Show, my show on ESPN Radio, and a young man named Julius came in who just beat cancer and whose
awesome.
Wish was to – he's going to WrestleMania and meeting John Cena. And he had just found out, but his dad surprised him because when he was in the hospital, he watched our radio shows on television. He watched it every day in the hospital. So he came in and he sat there and was just like freaking out to be there. And then I had Nikki Bella call, and watching this kid react, like I was just saying, it's not just that you are doing a good deed. The self-serving part's amazing because it makes you feel incredible to do something so good for someone.
It really does. And it's not a part of any of our talent's contract to do any of that work. And it is a part of a lot of other performers and athletes' contracts, but it's not in ours. They do it because they love it. They do it because it does make them feel so good, and they do it because they can make a difference. And I've heard so many of our talent, both men and women, talk about what they look forward to most at WrestleMania, And that is what they look forward to most are the hospital visits, the reading challenge, the visits to the Boys and Girls Clubs of America, the, you know, all of the different activities, the Make-A-Wish party. Those are the things that our talent look forward to most. And this year in Orlando, we were actually able to double the amount of activities we did in the community. We'll reach about 24 by the time we're done.
Because it's home, kind of?
Yeah, because we have all of our talent at NXT. So all right. of our NXT performers have been able to activate with some of the main roster talent that we send down. And they've been, you know, doing these activations all over Orlando.
I'll spin this into a question about both that and the product. When you talk about someone who's incredible, there's no one better than John Cena. And, you know, directly, maybe, at least in terms of speculation from wrestling fans, that is part of why John Cena's character has always been babyface. And you being someone who, as you put it earlier, just appreciates heel work. Do you feel that if John Cena hangs it up, and I'm just asking you as a fan,
right?
Do you feel if John Cena hangs it up, and I know I'm like the last person still asking about this, but I just can't help it, and never really has an opportunity to be bad John Cena, would you be disappointed in that at all? Would you like to see him get to do that?
At one point in his career, I really wanted to see him turn heel. I wanted it as a fan, and I also thought it was the right thing to do, but it turns out I was wrong. You know, and Vince and
did
John.
Did you fight that fight? Did you fight?
Oh, yeah.
Did you try to fight your
dad
on it?
Totally I did. Yeah. You know, I'm glad that we didn't go that way. And I think now it would be odd for John to turn heel. You know, I guess never say never because anything can happen in WWE, but I don't think I would really miss it. You know, I think that we would miss him. I don't know that we would miss the heel turn.
What are you most excited about? Well, two things. One, are you able to have any fun WrestleMania week, or is it absolutely just an incredible amount of stress? And then from an actual card standpoint, tell me what you're most excited about, because we already have 12 matches so far locked in for Sunday, April 2nd in Orlando.
Yes. Gosh. So first of all, while it is stressful, everything in WWE is fun. I mean, I love what I do, and I think pretty much everyone who is a part of WWE does too. It is fun. Yes, it's hard work, but man, are we all having a great time. We're so lucky, you know, that we're so privileged to be able to live our passion. And that's exactly what we're doing. And it doesn't get any bigger or any better than WrestleMania. And in terms of the matches that I'm looking forward to most, I mean, of course, Triple H and Seth Rollins. You know, it's unfortunate for Seth that, you know, Hunter's going to end his career and everything because he was on a roll there for a little while with the Authority.
He was hot for a minute.
That's okay.
And WrestleMania season is Hunter season. It's tough.
It's true. And let's see, you know, Undertaker versus Roman. Is Roman going to be able to retire the Undertaker? That's a huge story. Of course, Brock versus Goldberg. And I'm naming all of the Raw matches first because, of course, I'm the commissioner of Raw. Mm-hmm. You know, Jericho versus Kevin Owens, the Fatal 4-Way for the Women's Championship, and then going to SmackDown. And I realize I'm not naming everything, but then going to SmackDown, Alexa Bliss taking on the Locker Room and Shane versus AJ and you know, Bray Wyatt versus Randy Orton. I mean, there's
it's stacked. It really
it's
has
huge.
Turned into a
yeah, and Dean versus Baron Corbin. I mean, it's gonna be exciting through and through. I don't know that I really have a match. And then of course John Cena and Nikki Bella in the mixed tag match against Miz and Maryse. That's gonna be very entertaining. It already has been.
And I think a sleeper match. You know, we were talking about this earlier on our podcast is Aries and Neville.
Yes, of course. I can't even believe I didn't mention that. Aries and Neville are going to tear the house down.
Yeah, I'm very excited to see what they come up with. And I know you got to go. Last thing I want to ask you, what would you say? What would you recommend? Like, you know, my wife is a woman in the broadcasting business, and so I'm always paying attention, sort of, to the experience of women in the entertainment business. And you're in a unique spot because not only are you on camera, and not only are you incredibly important behind the scenes, but you also came up as a little girl who everyone knew and thought was cute and thought of in a certain way, and then escalated into being this really important figure. And I'm sure you had to deal with just so many different issues. What's like the main bit of advice that you give to women trying to make it in the entertainment business?
Believe in yourself. Don't listen to the haters. Confidence will win. And that doesn't mean be arrogant. That just means you have to believe in yourself, have the courage of your conviction, and don't take no for an answer.
Well, there it is. Stephanie, I look forward to seeing you at some point over the weekend and appreciate the opportunities I've been given to work for the company. It is truly currently the joy of my life that I've been able to do it, because I am just like you. I've been a fan since I was a little kid and just obsessed with, to me, it's the greatest art in the world, and I love getting to celebrate it and be a part of it. And thanks for taking some time to talk to us.
Thank you for having me. I can't wait to see you.
All right, Steph. Take care.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.